Learning from Hawaii's mistake, emergency management experts across the country are taking stock of what went wrong here. GP Strategies is a global company that offers, among other things, emergency management training services. Joe LaFleur is a former FEMA executive who also served as emergency services director in two states and is now with the company's corporate crisis program.
Many of the states on the continental side deal with nuclear power plants and many, many chemical plants. And because of those kinds of emergencies on a frequent basis, as well as large-scale natural disasters, and Hawaii is certainly very familiar with that, I think it's made everybody sharpen up on the national security area and the technological hazards and emergencies in their warning systems and processes and procedures and human factors. So it's been a good wake-up call, and I think there's been a good feeling on the continent about the way Hawaii has addressed this. The immediate introspection led by the Brigadier General, the Hawaii Emergency Management Agency doing its own internal activities and investigations, and the general public oversight of the process. So the transparency has been good, and it has been helpful the way it's been handled. I am aware that a number of the states have checked the design and the visual part of what their operators are seeing and what they're using, and having a stronger verification process, sort of the two-man rule, if you will, of verification, as well as a strengthening of passwords to get into the systems, because they certainly don't want any nefarious actors getting into these warning points and trying to override or take control of the system. So security's getting brushed up as well.
The employee, the so-called button pusher, was telling folks that he really thought it was the real thing and it was not a drill. And I'm not sure about the language. I know in the message it said, this is not a drill. How common is that in your experience?
It's to the outside world, outside on the continent, it looks like the messages might have been better written or described between the, this is a drill, this is not a drill, and exercise, which he has said he did not hear, and then became confused by the language. And I know that many states are going back and looking at their drill and test language to be sure it's very clear and that they would not be susceptible to that in the future. So that was a very unfortunate part of it. And to what degree that contributed to his nervousness of the event, it's hard to tell. But it certainly was a human error that was significant.
But in your experience, is that something you would just normally see in a message? This is not a drill?
No, you wouldn't necessarily see that. Usually it is, this is an exercise message, and it's reemphasized many times. But again, that wouldn't be a wrong thing to do. I certainly don't want to say that, but it was a mixed message in this particular communication that was developed. There's no doubt about that.
That was Joe LaFleur with GP Strategies. We also spoke with Tom Baker, the company's director of government operations. Baker worked as Homeland Security Program Instructor and the Navy's Emergency and Crisis Training Manager as recently as 2012.
You know, when we're working through situations like this, you always go to the process first and blame people last. So when I heard about this situation, you know, my thoughts immediately went to, okay, I wonder what that process was internally and where the breakdown came. And it's unfortunate that it did, but again, my initial thoughts were about the process.
What are the best practices? What do you think that we ought to be looking at going forward?
So, you know, I think certainly whenever we run an exercise at GP Strategies, we always preface every command and every message with exercise. And so as they're going through training, which is obviously so critical, to preface every communication with exercise gets it in everyone's mind, everyone is aligned that what is happening is, in fact, an exercise. And I can tell you that if training is done right, it sure doesn't feel like an exercise. It is supposed to feel very, very real, because you want to put the trainee, EMTs under that sort of stress. But the two big things, I think, the two best practices that I could mention are two-person protocol and every message that goes out, both internally and externally, is prefaced with the words exercise, exercise.
And there was an issue about possibly someone picking up the handset so that part of that message was cut off and was not maybe heard by everybody.
Sure. Well, you know, that obviously things can happen like that. People can, what we call step on each other, where people talk over the top of each other and messages are missed. But if there is a protocol of continually emphasizing that this is in fact an exercise, that can be alleviated. Also, a very good pre-brief about what's going to occur, not giving away, you know, some of the game aspect of it, but certainly letting everyone know that they should not go ahead with a certain procedure because it's an exercise, should be in everyone's mind during the pre-brief and therefore then during the exercise.
Can you talk about the wireless alert system? Because one of the things that was flagged is that not everybody got the message because they had a certain button turned off on their cell phones.
Well, I am not sure of the inner workings of all of the cell phones that are out there on the market, but I can tell you this. When I was in the Pentagon and we had the earthquake that came out of central northern Virginia, you know, personally, I tried to call my wife, but was unable to because the cell phone towers were absolutely overloaded with transmissions. So that is a very common occurrence in disaster situations where in the cell phone age that we have learned that cell phone towers can become easily overloaded. And so that may be one of the reasons that we saw limited or partial dissemination of the message. Other than that, you know, I really can't speak to the specific system or the inner workings of the cell phones.
I guess there's just some concern because when not everybody got it, and if there are limitations to how many characters you can use, you know, versus if you were using the old system where the broadcasters got the message out and there would be a continuous stream of information about emergency shelters, you know, that kind of thing that you could broadly disseminate good information quickly versus, you know, 20 characters on a text.
Right. So when it comes to that, you know, when you're generating a message, you have to ensure that you're getting the audience right. You have to ensure the urgency is there. And you have to have, in this case, for this particular question, the reliability of the medium that the message is going out across. And therefore, when you're dealing with a disaster situation, you have to have multiple ways to get that message across. Because this was an isolated incident with a one particular message, that may be why multiple systems were not used. Also, when you're dealing with disasters, there are different types of disasters, obviously, or emergency situations. You have emergency situations that allow for a great deal of information to go out over a long period of time. If you think about a hurricane that's brewing, you can wait for a newspaper to come out every single day to tell you every single detail you want to know about that hurricane for days before it actually makes landfall. When you're dealing with a situation like this and you have a exercised you know, missile inbound, or you have an earthquake with a possible tsunami, you have much less time to get the message out and much less time to get it right. And the medium of communication is more limited. So, you know, these are things that you have to think about when you're putting out an emergency message, depending on the situation and depending on the, depending on the situation, the medium can change, you know, drastically, and the urgency and the quickness that the message has to go out obviously changes.
And do you think there ought to be a standardized message? Just one that deals with missiles, and it's the same across the board in every state?
Difficult question to answer. You know, people react to emergency situations differently. You have to be careful when you have a standardized message that goes out that people in who receive that message in a test situation will react accordingly or appropriately in a real situation. Would it be a good idea? It may be a good idea. I think further study needs to be done. One of the studies that has gone out is that you actually get more reaction from the second notification than the first notification. People need confirmation of the message. If you can imagine yourself in an emergency situation, you get something that comes across your cell phone or you hear a siren, you kind of stand there almost dumbfounded. Is this real? When that second message comes across, that's when people react. And so whether the first message is a standardized message with the second message coming out being a little bit more urgent with detail, or whether you hear a siren and that siren means a certain thing followed by the second siren message, certainly for confirmation for people, yes, I think that is required. But I think more study needs to be done on whether a standardized message across the board, across the country, is the right thing to do.
That was Tom Baker of GP Strategies, one of two emergency management experts sharing their insight about Hawaii's missile alert mistake. We talked to them from their headquarters in Maryland. They agreed that the big challenge ahead is to restore the public's trust in the Hawaii Emergency Management Agency.
We've been collecting your calls and emails throughout our coverage of the fallout from the missile alert, and Troy Fuji wrote this on our Instagram page this week. While it might be convenient and even satisfying to assign blame to the button pusher, the FCC investigation appears to point to deeper underlying deficits in state HIEMA leadership, communication, training, safeguards, and discipline. It's far too convenient to place the bulk of the blame or responsibility upon the button pusher when there are more troubling systemic failures that led to the situation the employees were placed in. State leaders should first take a hard, honest look in the mirror. The failure of the button pusher represents systems failure and dysfunction under their leadership as supervisors and agency officials.
Thanks for your thoughts. You can always reach our talkback line by calling 808-792-8217 or sending an email to talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org.